The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. Keep your mission on your mind, and your mind on your mission. This is Mission Minded with Michael Coleman.
Welcome back to another Mission Minded. My name is Tony Curry. On the left-hand side of the screen here on our YouTube channel is Michael Coleman. He's the CEO of the Heart of Alabama Food Bank and a show we do every single week here on the TKR app. You can hear that along with 100,000 other folks who have downloaded our app through Android or Apple. You can hear it at least 5 days a week. Wherever you get your favorite podcast or watch it right here on our YouTube channel. Michael, everything good with you? How you doing, brother? How you doing this week?
Yeah, just starting the week off with my good friend Tony Curry, so it's all is good.
Love doing the show with you. We do another show called Bite by Bite, which comes on right after this one. You can also podcast that specifically has to do with feeding our needs around the country through Heart of Alabama Food Bank and Feeding America. We'll talk about that in a few minutes. I saw this interesting article, and I had heard the story about TikTok. Obviously, the Senate and the House passing legislature in hopes to pull this back a little bit because they believe the CCP was enforcing some different things so they could get more information about U.S. We all know about this.
Yeah.
And so this was not a bill to ban TikTok. It was a bill to divest TikTok. So they would have to sell off some of these things. So it wouldn't be such a large Chinese monopoly, if you will. And I heard many people saying, well, it's an impossibility because TikTok is worth too much. It is too big. Yeah. It is too big to sell off. And no one can, I mean, and you just look at what's his face did with Twitter.
And Elon Musk.
Yeah. Elon Musk. And it's like, you know, and even after he, well, I don't know what he paid for, $34 billion after what he paid for that.
I think it's about $44
billion. Yeah. He realized it probably wasn't the best decision in the world. Now, I don't know how he feels about that now, but anyway, so you've got another social media platform that's obviously bigger than Twitter, a lot bigger than Twitter. And I'm also hearing that in a lot of situations, Reddit, for another example, another one of these really large social media platforms that have millions, if not billions of followers, but they don't know how to make money with it, or they don't know how to take all those pieces and make money. And then I heard something the other day about Uber, which I still don't understand. I understand it now because I just got my Credit One credit card bill for my son and in Clemson, and he used my credit card like six times last week for DoorDash and for Uber Eats. I'm like, he's $16, $17 a pop.
You're killing me, brother.
He had McDonald's delivered to his dorm, and I'm like, dude, I know your car's a half mile away, but $16 delivery charge. So now I know how it works. Use your old man's credit card is how it works. but Uber, I may be wrong, like, what's $4.5 billion to $6.5 billion, but it's lost a lot of money. And so I did a little research, and you and I were talking towards the end of last week's show. Traditionally, if you have a business and it's not doing well, you must close your business. You can't make it. If every month you have a boutique or I have a radio station and I'm losing my ass every month and I can't continue to pay people to come work for me, there's no reason to continue. You can't get investors because why people want to invest in a company that's obviously losing a lot of money. Uber lost $6.5 billion. I don't see them divesting anytime soon. Chevron lost its you-know-what last year, despite the fact that oil went through the roof. Pfizer lost a lot of money, which is really hard to believe because of all COVID. You would have thought maybe, and maybe it's because, and now they were primarily Pfizer and Chevron were primarily stock numbers. They went from one stock. So they lost money, but they didn't really lose money. I'm not talking about money out of the, but then you're talking about Casper. Casper lost money. Lyft lost money. Blue Apron lost money. I'm talking they lost. Peloton lost money. They got so big, so fast, and it just fell apart, and they lost their butt. They're not worth nearly what they were worth before. WeWork, Zillow. I can go on and on and on and on and on. And I'm just wondering, when you have a business that employs 35,000 people, and it's losing, it's bludgeoning money, it's losing money every single month, how does that business model work? I don't know the answer, and I was wondering if you could help me out and what you learned about that.
Well, I think I told you before we started, what I'm about to say I just kind of went on a learning adventure myself because this is not fully my background, but I've had those same questions and wrestling with the same things. You know, I flash back. I remember when the whole question about the internet, so this was late 90s, when the whole, we were all being introduced to the internet. Not everybody had websites yet, you know, that because companies didn't necessarily see the value in it that they do today. And I remember, you know, it's when Amazon was getting started and you were hearing about them, but everything was about how do you monetize the internet? And to some degree, some things like a Reddit where you can subscribe, you don't necessarily, there's not a subscription fee. At least that I'm aware of. I'm not on Reddit. I don't really know, but and some of those don't have subscription fees and things like that. So the question is, well, how do you make money and where's your value come from and all of those kind of things? So I went to look and I looked in our past and tried to find some obvious things that that jumped out. And it was really interesting because there's a lot written about this and a lot of experts weigh in, people that you like the Warren Buffetts of the world that you really kind of expect. And one of the things he said was it kind of began my thinking was price is what you pay, value is what you get. And really what he's referencing is when you are valuing something. So if I go buy a stock right now, and so let's just say it's stock X. Not the X. I shouldn't say X now that Elon Musk has a company called X. Let's say stock A, and I go to A, and let's say it's really, really popular. And it's just had an initial public offering. So you can go back to the Facebook. So he comes out and he says, okay, we're going to issue out, and there's a lot of work and research behind this. We're going to issue out, let's say, we're going to have an initial public offering of, I'm going to make this up, 1 million shares of stock Facebook. So we're going from a privately held company into a public company. There's all sorts of rules and all that governing and all that that goes with that. Well, as soon as they do that, then they're saying, we're going to value the stock at $20 a share, and we're going to do 1 million shares. So if we sell it all, that'll be. But what happens is that valuation is not based on anything in that moment necessarily that has that kind of value.
Exactly. Yeah,
that's right. So what it is, it's projecting out into the future revenues, future costs, all that. And so then you get into a real guessing game. And so that you have experts on the ground that look at these companies and say, okay, let's look. And this is where the financial analysts come in. They're like, yeah, this stock is now at $50 a share. But if you look at the underneath, what the actual nuts and bolts are, how much are they actually earning? How much is the actual cost that going out? Then there's formulas that they come up with and go, no, the fundamentals don't warrant a $50 purchase. So it could be a good company, but the price that they would just say the stock is too high. It's valued too high. It's not necessarily worth that. It's just what we are projecting. And people buy and sell stocks all the time based on not necessarily the actual worth, but the valuation. So let's say, for instance, let's look at Bud Light. How many billions of dollars did they come back and say Bud Light had lost? Well, in reality, most of that was in the loss of stock value. So he explained it this way. To the individual stockholders, that's bad. So if I have assets, and let's keep it simple, $1,000 of stock, and it loses half its value, now I only have a $500 asset, and so I'm affected by that. The company, if their stock drops 50% in a month, now that's not good for the company, but you have to ask yourself, what did the company itself actually, unless the company holds the stock? Mm-hmm. So you don't actually, they don't look at their bank accounts and say, wait a minute, we had $10 billion saved up. Now we're down to $5 billion because the stock rose or fell. And so One of the stories I read equated it to like a household. Let's say you go up in your attic and you find a Van Gogh up in your attic, and it's worth millions. Your bank account still says you have $1,500 in your bank account. All right. So you have wealth, but your situation, your daily situation really has not changed. It is this, I have this asset. Well, if the house burns down and the Van Gogh burns up with it, your actual life, what you eat, how much you travel, has not changed at all. And that's a little insight into how companies are. They have these huge losses that can be affected by stock primarily, but there's a lot of other things. When they do up their taxes, and that's where you get into tax law, I'm just looking at some really common things. They may have, we have all these revenues. Like you'll hear like, Jeff Bezos, when he was at Amazon, he never paid any federal tax. And so they ought to be punished and they're the bad people. Well, the reason he doesn't, for all the revenue he was bringing in, he was building new plants and new businesses and creating jobs. And so he was taking the earnings and reinvesting that. And then on all this, these buildings and this equipment, it's, you take depreciation off. So if your depreciation on a piece of equipment, you could be losing millions of dollars a year just of equipment worth. But again, that's all paper. I mean, it's all on paper. So you could come in and say, yeah, we actually made millions if you just look at how much revenue came in versus our expenses. But when you put in cost and you put in all these lost this and did this and all these manipulations that are very legal, they're in the tax code, but you can come out looking like you barely broke even or you had a small loss, and they do that to keep the tax bills low.
This reminds me a little bit of what Donald Trump is going through right now, who's trying to come up with $475 million, which I was not aware of that he even remotely had close to. Now we're hearing he's got somewhere between $300 and $400 million in cash, which is unbelievable, but he's got his name on 17,000 buildings. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, would you rather be Donald Trump and be in that situation? Or if you really sit down and push the numbers, is he upside down? Because I think a lot of people in this country are upside down. I think that's one of the reasons a lot of us hate doing budgets, is because we're afraid when we do our budgets every month, we're going to realize we're spending a lot more than we're bringing in. Yeah. But I got my boat in my driveway now, and I get to go boating every weekend. But you know, and my neighbors think I'm doing really, really well, but I'm not really doing that well.
I use the term before where you're just cash poor. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that you are living in poverty, but your cash poor means all your money's tied up in either investments or toys or the lake house, the second home, all that kind of stuff. And there's lots of Americans who credit rating is affected because they can't pay all their bills when they come in. They just don't have that disposable income. Now, nobody's going to call Trump cash poor that can come up with millions and millions of dollars of cash. Yeah. But, you know, when you look at all his properties and all his buildings and all that kind of stuff, so all those are generating revenue. Okay. So they have a value where they're located. They're generating revenue. But they also, anytime he does a building renovation, then all that is an improvement on that building. So that all gets written off the taxes as an expense. Mm. And of course, he's going to hire the right attorneys And again, it obviously some people think he's overinflated, and so that's what was ruled in the court of law. But that's where he's inflated his own wealth. But it's so murky. It's not like you could go to Trump and say, "Hey, show me what's in your bank account," and that's going to determine how wealthy you are. And
the reason we wanted to inflate his wealth, because a lot of people don't want to inflate their wealth, because obviously if they do that, they're paying more taxes. But the reason he was doing that was so he could go loan them more money.
That's right.
He was saying his properties were worth a lot more than they actually were worth, because he wanted to tap into that.
He wanted to borrow more money. And he wanted to use that as collateral. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And I love what you're saying here, because this makes a lot of sense. And I was not aware of this. And that's why I knew you'd come to the table and you'd be loaded for this, because when you're talking about a business losing money, there's two different ways you're losing money. Are you actually losing money on paper. In other words, you talk about Bud Light. Did you go from $100 a share to $80 a share? You lost $20 a share, and you can say, okay, we got 20 million shares. We lost $40 million. Are we losing $40 million annually, or is it just off a stock? No.
Right.
Or is your business really losing money? So I look at an Uber from top to bottom. I mean, it is, and again, whoever came up with the idea, if I came to you 15 years ago and said, I got this great idea where I'm going to allow anybody to be a yellow cab and they can drive you wherever you want. You can have your favorite cab driver. You can do it. You would have looked at me like I was lost my damn mind.
Right.
First of all, we've got that covered. We've got plenty of taxi cab services. Yeah. We don't need taxi cab services in Hoover. Yeah. How many people need Uber? Now if there was some mass epidemic of drunk driving.
Yeah,
I could see where we have an issue here. We have a problem here. We have something in Hoover. We have mass problems. So we need to create something. I still don't understand it. And it does not shock me at all that it's losing money. But I would wonder why I could continue. And now what do? We sink more money into it. Now we do Uber Eats. Now we do DoorDash. And now DoorDash not only does Eats, but now. So now everyone's. And then what that does, it makes Walmart have to start delivering their stuff. And now you got Kroger's. They don't even have stores here delivering cold. I mean, it doesn't.
What I wonder, you see the technology that's coming in, and a lot of that's like, well, again, what's the potential? Because so many people use it. So Uber has just become Uber or Lyft or those kind of services. Now, I don't use them ever. We don't have a lot good public transportation down here in the South. So. But when I travel to conferences and things like that, I just go from the airport to Uber and travel around. It's ingrained as opposed to being down here. But I really wonder on some of these companies, if you just looked at their net assets, like what is the actual revenue? Take all the tax lingo out. You cannot, no business can have sustainable losses. Now, this is the mom and pop shop. I have to pay an electric bill every month. There's no write-offs. I mean, yes, that's a business expense, but I'm saying I actually have to have enough capital to pay for new inventory into a boutique and cost and repairs to the building. There's no stock inflation. There's none of the things that a large corporation has. One of the things I didn't really talk about, too, is you'll see huge write-offs with what they just refer to as one-time cost. Mm-hmm. So let's say the stock market loves when companies kind of do a reset where you kind of fine-tune. So you're getting rid of some fat. You're cutting some fat out. You're getting leaner. You're getting meaner. But every time you do that, you're going to have a huge write-off, loss write-off, because if you think about it, if you cut 20% of your workforce, and let's just say that's 20,000 people, you cut them. A lot of those are close to retirement. You're going to have to fulfill their, you know, you're going to have to give them severance packages, you know, all these soft landings and all that. So let's say you have a $12 billion cost. So you could look at it and go, oh, well, you lost $5 billion this year. Well, you did. That's true. However, it's not sustainable. That's not going to be a $12 billion cost. You made that investment in laying those people off. Now, next year, your payroll is going to be much leaner and much meaner. And if you say, yeah, I'm down to I took a $5 million loss because I had a $12 billion write-off, then you would say, well, without that, I would have actually made $7 billion. So lots of times they will make decisions, company will make decisions, yes, we're going to take a loss, but they're situating themselves for future growth. And so stock market, even though they took a loss that year, their stock may actually rise because it's based on the valuation of future productivity and future sales and future, and a company that's biting the bullet but getting better can increase in value on paper.
We can get into this on another show, but I think it's really interesting to unionize or not to unionize is something we've talked about on the show. Where do you land on public, private, as far as in business ownership goes? Does it depend on what you're selling, what you're dealing with? I've been part of both. I've been part of radio stations that were privately held, and I saw how wonderful they were run. And then I saw how public stations went. I saw the money windfall, but I also saw it bite the dust and get onto a penny a share. But what's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so there's pros and cons to both. I mean, if you work for a private company, but that company establishes a good ethos, it's run with ethics, it's run, you're proud to be a part of that company. You know, the company is really pouring into its workers and making sure they have living wages and all that kind of stuff. That can be fantastic to work for that kind of company. But sometimes you don't have the same advantages as you do when you operate for a public company, because it's a different set of rules. Mm-hmm. And depending on if you're in a right to work state, like most of us are in the Southeast, and you're right, there's a lot of concern right now about, because Amazon is expanding into the South even more so. Montgomery's looking at having a plant built in a couple of years. The site's already. And so just like Birmingham last couple of years, there's been a lot of concern about, you know, is Amazon going to go union or not? And the truth of the matter is, I think we've touched on this briefly. Unions were so desperately needed because people were losing their lives and had no protection. And they were abusing people who were desperate to work just to put any ounce of food on the table. That's typically not the case anymore. You have OSHA, you have government regulations, you have all these kind of things that kind of keep safety measures. And so each person then has to decide the cost of a union in terms of relationship with management, in terms of I have to pay money out of my pocket to support a union. Is that worth it, or will I get those kind of benefits without it? And so it really just comes down to what you believe. You know, do you feel more empowered? Do you feel like it's more under your control? That's whether you support a union or not. Typically in the South, the attitude has been, you know, we don't want that. A company offers to pay me something, I can agree to work for it. I can agree not to. And, you know, but I don't want to poo-poo all unions because, you know, and I know people say, oh, Mike, are you just walking that line? I do see pros and cons to it. And there are over the years, a lot of company abuses that have been solved through unions, you know, bringing those to light and having the power to deal with that. But I've also seen unions get excessive. It costs people their jobs, cause plants to shut down because they said, we can't afford the labor. We can't afford what you want. And then so everybody loses in that. So what's that right balance? That's always the struggle.
Great stuff, man. Info@TonyCurryRadio.net. Info@TonyCurryRadio.net. You got any questions, answers, responses, anything we talked about here this week on this wonderful show called Mission Minded? Keep your mind on your mission on your mind. We'll do it again next week and continue to listen up here on the TKR app or wherever you're watching, particularly here on our YouTube channel. Another show called Bite by Bite is next right here on Tony Curry Radio with Michael Coleman and Tony Curry.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.